Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to Hour 3 of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. A lot more to get to today with all of you. I want to remind you to please go to clayandbuck.com for updates, clips posted. I mean, Clay's been talking about it. We've had such a rock star lineup of guests this week. I mean, just pretty amazing. We had Rob O'Neill on today, the man who was, of course, Special Operations Command, Navy SEAL, killed Bin Laden, part of that Abbottabad raid. He had some very, memorable insights about, well, basically, he was dropping bombs about dropping bombs.
Yes, Clay, he was fantastic.
And then some. And we also have had on Matt Walsh from the Daily Wire, Tommy Lahren from Fox Nation, all of that available at clayandbuck.com. So do check that out. Also, follow us respectively on social media. I'm at Buck Sexton. He's at Clay Travis on Twitter and Facebook and all that good stuff. We're just talking about how Carrie Underwood got in a little bit of hot water for liking a Matt Walsh post. So it's like the world all comes together here, Clay. And really what we need to do is get Joe Rogan to join us sometime to talk about how we begin. I want this to be a nonpartisan anti-Fauciite revolution.
Look, we talked earlier about, we've been talking all week about what's the long-range impact of this Afghanistan situation. In particular, Buck, what we're talking about is this such a disaster that it starts to impact Joe Biden domestically and connect with all the failures that he has here? Or have we become such a hyper-polarized society that there's not a lot of movement, right? The people who are Democrats are going to stay on Joe Biden's team. The people who are Republicans are going to be opposed to him. And I've been curious whether some of those middle of the road voters, people who frankly may have voted for Joe Biden in 2020, but voted for Donald Trump in 2016, those suburban voters, you go look at the data. That's where Trump lost this election to the extent that he lost it. It was the swing in the suburbs. He got more minority support, more Hispanic support, more black support, more Asian support. Where he lost support was in the suburbs. And if he were able to keep those voters, he would have won in a total landslide. And those voters seem like they're starting to abandon Joe Biden. And we talked about this earlier, 13% of Democrats would vote for Donald Trump today, who voted for Joe Biden back in 2020 in November. So are we now set for a real abandonment of Joe Biden? Remember, Kamala Harris, we haven't heard from her in a week. She's disappeared. We've only heard from Joe Biden once as this Afghanistan crisis plays out. All of the military advisors and all of the national security people are pointing the finger, front page of Wall Street Journal, front page of the New York Times. They're saying, we told Joe Biden what would happen if he did this, and he did it anyway. They're all jumping away.
We've actually got our friend Amber Smith joining us now, as promised. Amber is somebody who understands the Beyond the Horizon counterterrorism mission very well, though she was in country in Afghanistan as part of our efforts there, as part of the fight against the Taliban. She was a Kiowa helicopter combat pilot. She was also a Department of Defense official under the Trump administration. Amber, thanks so much for making time for us.
Of course. Great to be with you.
So we're hearing a lot about over the horizon or beyond the horizon counterterrorism capability here from the Biden administration. As somebody who was flying a Kiowa, understands how the aerial assets will play into this. I mean, what should people know about how that will actually work and what some of the capabilities we will have going forward, given that we've got this military withdrawal in country underway?
Yeah, so when you hear over the horizon capabilities, it really means what aerial assets we have available to strike in country that isn't currently there. So we have, you know, all the best capabilities in the world to be able to continue these counterterrorism operations. We've got strike groups in the region in the Middle East. We have B-52 bombers at Al Udeid in Qatar. They're able to do long-distance strike operations in Afghanistan. Then we have multiple other air bases, UAE, Kuwait, multiple in Kuwait. So the Air Force is able to do sustained, you know, fighter bombing, tanker surveillance operations. But I will say, just a few months ago, when in June, when they still thought that they were going to have this absolutely perfect orderly transition of power when the military left and handed over to the Afghanistan government, they were still trying to look and figure out about the extent of those over horizon capabilities, because the thing is, they work fine when you still have contractors on the ground or you still have friendlies on the ground and a stable Afghan military that is able to talk people onto targets, give accurate grids for, you know, precision guided weapons and all of that. We no longer have that. So the risk has dramatically increased when it comes to CivCAS, civilian casualties, really just increases the room for area when you're, or for error when you're operating through the lens of essentially a soda straw.
Amber, I know we're still trying to figure out, thanks for coming on, this is Clay. I know we're still trying to figure out how we're going to get all of these American citizens out of Afghanistan, and it's a total mess. But you had experience over there. You've seen this happen. We've been talking a lot on the show about top military advisors and top intelligence advisors saying, we told Joe Biden not to do it in this manner. Are you surprised that speaking out is already occurring? And when and or how do we determine who should be blamed? I know that Joe Biden ultimately bears all the blame because he's the commander in chief. But how does this process play out in what is likely to be a long running pointing of finger situation between intelligence agencies, the military, and the White House?
Yeah, well, I think you really need to break it down into two different categories. One is the Afghanistan war as a whole and the failures that have come along with it through multiple administrations. And then the other one is the botched withdrawal. That is solely on President Joe Biden. He's the commander in chief and he made that decision. When it comes to military leaders specifically focusing on this withdrawal, they are not completely not to blame. I am extremely baffled that the CENTCOM commander, General McKenzie, agreed to the plan. And this brings up another point. I want to know, was it the Joint Chiefs of Staff that drew up the plans to close down Bagram Air Base and have that as a course of action for a decision maker to go with that plan, where they closed down Bagram Air Base and really thought that they were going to be able to use Kabul Airport as a single exit point in the country in case things went bad. So while military leaders may have known some intelligence about, you know, the capabilities of the Taliban and may have voiced them to the Biden administration, why did they move forward and agree to a plan that really, really put a lot of American lives at risk, as we're seeing today in terms of the security situation in Kabul?
We're speaking to Amber Smith. She's the author of Danger Close. She's a veteran of the Afghanistan war, Kiowa helicopter pilot who deployed to Afghanistan, also former deputy assistant to the Secretary of Defense under the Trump administration. And Amber, what should we be looking for now? I mean, it's all dependent. Getting these Americans out is dependent on a really, it feels like a two-step process, right? Getting around the ring of Taliban security to the airport and then the airlift to get them out and get Americans to, you know, safe haven, safe harbor, back on U.S. soil preferably, but obviously get them out just to a place where they're no longer at high risk. What do you expect that to look like in the days ahead? And do you have any confidence that Biden administration has the planning for that lined up properly?
Well, I think in terms of getting American citizens as well as Afghans who helped the American military, getting them to Kabul Airport should be the absolute number one focus right now. And unfortunately, we've seen them set up a perimeter at Kabul International Airport. But the problem is that the Taliban has set up checkpoints all throughout the city, all on the outside of that perimeter. So people who are trying to, you know, go in through the funnels that take them into Kabul airport, they're getting stopped by the Taliban on the way. And we're already seeing, you know, common Taliban tactics in terms of beatings, whippings, just absolutely brutal, which is what the Taliban does. And so at some point, the military is likely going to have to expand outside of that perimeter in order to get these Americans and the people that worked with us out, because they're not going to be able to get through some of the Taliban checkpoints on their own. And that's where, like, all right, let's see the State Department, let's see the president need to step it up in terms of, okay, direct communication to the Taliban, more of like what we saw with the Trump administration about, look, do not touch our people. There's going to be absolute consequences directly to the Taliban if you do not open up these channels to get our people into the Kabul airport.
Combat pilot and veteran Amber Smith. Amber, thanks so much for being with us, sharing your expertise. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Buck. Thanks.
We're going to come back here in a moment with the backlash in NYC, Clay, to vaccine passports, because we got to start winning some of these fights somewhere. And now we have something else to add into the mix, because, Clay, it turns out when you tell a majority of African-American residents of a very large city, in this case the largest city in America, they're no longer allowed to participate in public life without an ID and a vaccine passport, people start to say that feels a little...
Sounds a little bit like it might be Jim Crow-esque, maybe super racist. Also, Buck, I just got some new numbers. We've talked a lot about data. What is the impact of Afghanistan going to be on Joe Biden? Well, it ain't good. I got some numbers we're going to hit you with in the second half of this show hour as well. Lots of good stuff coming your way. But first, what you got for us?
Well, you know, I see headlines all the time now because all I do is just read. I live in like this matrix of news about inflation, the soaring national debt. Those are functions of math. We understand these are numbers, right? This isn't opinion stuff. They're reminders that we're going to see some major correction here in the stock market, maybe even a crash, and it could come sooner than later. And when that happens, how are you going to help protect all you've built up in savings and in your IRA? I mean, how do we, the people, protect our money, our retirement, our savings? Well, the answer is simple. We rely on what we know historically works. We rely on Old Faithful, gold and silver. People are buying real gold and silver from the Oxford Gold Group because they want to take action today to protect themselves from an uncertain financial future in this country. It's gold that you can actually hold in your hands, I'm talking about here. I've gone through the process myself. You get on the phone, you figure out what you want. Oxford will take you through every step of the process, and then it actually arrives at your home. There's nothing like actually holding that gold in the palm of your hand when it gets to you, because you know you've got it and it's secure. Call the Oxford Gold Group right now at 833-404-GOLD. Oxford Gold will send you a free guide on investing and answer all your questions. Protect your money before things get even worse and call the Oxford Gold Group today, 833-404-GOLD, 833-404-G-O-L-D.
Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton. We are rolling through the Wednesday edition of the program. Had a little photo shoot. Couple hours went on this morning, Buck.
Clay was the he did the bathing suit portion of the photo shoot. I was doing more of the moo-moo, but we had fun.
We got to say this too, by the way, for those of you who follow us on social media. Yesterday we had Tommy Lahren in studio. Maybe the worst photo that's ever been taken of the two of us that went out on social media.
We are better than that photo, Clay. Tommy looks amazing all the time, but we are better than that photo.
You and I look like the two. I mean,
trolls
that might be
from under the radio bridge.
If you haven't seen it, you should go follow us on Instagram. You can go see it. Tommy posted it. But when we were taking photos today, my wife saw the photo with Tommy that we had from in studio, and she was like, man, that's one of the worst photos I've ever seen of you. So when we, I went.
You look like Homer Simpson. Don't look like Homer Simpson
wearing,
in real life.
I'm wearing a polo, shirt.
It's more like a poncho, really.
Yeah,
it's more like a poncho.
It looks like it's like a 5X. I didn't even know they made polo shirts that could look that bad on someone. So I took a picture of some of our photos that we got today, and I texted it to my wife, and I said, see, I don't actually look like I weigh 900 pounds. Anyway, we got a photo shoot today. We were talking earlier in the program about this study that came out from a poll from Rasmussen, where they said basically if the election were to be had today, 13% of Democrats would vote for Donald Trump over Joe Biden, and it would actually be a landslide. Now, some of you out there are like, yeah, It was a landslide anyway. Well, that's another discussion. But we have to say this. Trump was on, I believe, with Sean Hannity, right? I believe this is where this cut is from. And we had him on, what, back in June, I guess, and he wouldn't really answer the 2024 question. I'm sure they shared that Rasmussen poll results with him. But Trump was asked whether he was willing to say whether he'd run for president, and he gave a very Trumpian answer. Play cut 16.
So because the campaign finance laws are extremely complicated and unbelievably stupid, I'm actually not allowed to answer that question. Can you believe it? I'd love to answer it. But let me put it this way. I think you'll be happy, and I think a lot of our friends will be very happy. But I'm not actually allowed to answer it. It makes it very difficult if I do. So, people, you're going to be happy because I love this country, and I hate to see what's happening.
I got to say, he is, first of all, as we all know, one of the greatest showmen on earth. I mean, just understands how to get the focus of the people, and beyond that, he's got to see what's going on with Joe Biden and the very real buyer's remorse or voter's remorse, I guess you could say, that's out there right now. If Trump feels like he's running against a Biden that the American people have seen enough of to know what's really going on, essentially, if he believes that enough in the center, we know there are crazy libs that hate Trump more than any person in history, right? But if he believes there are enough people in the center who are coming back to reality here, and we're not in a COVID year, as you and I've talked about so many times, and the margins of victory being very small, we've discussed this a million times, but Trump's in, I think. And that's just gonna be amazing in so many ways. It's going to be fantastic.
I think what's so also interesting about this is, are they gonna Weekend at Bernie's to Joe Biden? Right? Are they going to try to run him again at 82 years old?
They can't do Kamala, but they can't push Kamala aside.
That's what I'm going to. If Kamala's not the nominee and Biden can't run, because there's no way they can drag Biden across the finish line again.
Come on, they did it the first time.
Yeah, but they had COVID then. I don't think they're going to be able to use COVID in 24, although who knows? Maybe the Chinese will leak another thing.
I don't think they can do it and win, but I think they'll try.
Yeah. But if they don't, Buck, Kamala Harris, it's racist and sexist if she's not the choice. The point here is the Democrats don't have a very good bench. Whereas you can look right now, Republicans, you can say DeSantis, Tim Scott, Mike Pompeo, Trump himself, obviously, Kristi Noem, whether some people like Nikki Haley. Like, there's a roster, I think, of Republican candidates that is far better than anybody out there for the Democrats.
I'm just still trying to process. It's a little, the idea that you would even suggest that Kamala Harris wouldn't be the nominee, that just feels racist and sexist.
It's racist and sexist.
Just even bringing this up.
I know. The world
media,
that we live
media
in.
Matters is going to be all over you just
racist,
for bringing this
well, they
up.
Already say it. Clay racist, Travis. Sexist, Clay Travis.
It goes in the racist, sexist.
I'm arguing they have to put Kamala Harris, who, by the way, nobody's heard of, in over almost a week with this Afghanistan mess.
Let's get back into all the COVID stuff in a second, but you know, you're likely to be in the same position as most stock market investors. You want to stay on top of things, but how do you find the time? Things are changing so quickly and you've got things to do. You got a job, you got family, you got responsibilities. So how about this? One way to stay on top of the market and make great trades is to subscribe to Carnivore Trading, the company of legendary Wall Street traders who are sharing their activity in the stock market in real time. These are stock market legends that have decided to share their trades with all of us. I'm a carnivore trader. You should be too. Now all of us from newbies to the most experienced can have access to these explosive trades. Carnivore will let you try their service for free for 14 days. This is your chance to see and mirror Carnivore's explosive trades in real time. Go to GetOurTrades.com, promo code USA. That's GetOurTrades.com, promo code USA. See website for terms and conditions, past performance, no guarantee of future earning.
As far as the vaccine, I'm very proud of it. I push the FDA like they've never been pushed. They don't like me too much. I'm not so sure I like them. Very bureaucratic. But I got them to approve a great vaccine, three of them, in a period of less than 9 months. I was told by Fauci and everybody else it would take 3 to 5 years and probably five, and it probably won't even happen. And I got it done in less than 9 months. So I consider it a great achievement. I actually think that if we didn't get it done worldwide, you would have another Spanish flu, which killed almost 100 million people, according to history.
Welcome back to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. There you had former President Trump on Hannity's show last night talking about his pride over the Operation Warp Speed enabled vaccine. And so this is always left out when they pretend like Trump is anti-vax. He's actually has been taking victory laps about the vaccine for many, many months now. But the narrative cannot be bothered with facts, as we know, Clay. That cannot be allowed to get in the way. The narrative about natural immunity from infection cannot be allowed to get in the way of
data. It didn't even have to be actual facts aren't allowed to be discussed until, as we were just talking about during the break, all of a sudden, everybody has the exact same analysis of facts that we've been talking about on this show for months, which they say, oh, you can't say that, right? And then they end up recognizing what we're talking about.
It goes from banned to inescapably and obviously true.
It's amazing.
And we're not supposed to notice when it comes to everything the lockdowners say, that transition, there's this silent transition from, shut up, you can't say that, peasant. Listen to Fauci. Listen to the science. Oh, my God. And then it's, oh, wow, you guys were right about that thing. It looks like the numbers, which is why we're going to have Berenson on to talk about vaccines are fading. This is fact. If you had said that a month ago, maybe even a few weeks ago, but a month ago for sure, certainly 3 months ago, you were a science-denying hack who wants people to die. We have the receipts, folks. We see what they say about them on CNN and on the news. Turns out that was actually true. Another place where we see the imperviousness to facts and data, the kind of things we talk about here on the show, is New York City, where, first of all, there are a lot of places. I'm going back to New York tomorrow.
Yep.
Tomorrow night, I'll be back in New York City. Got my brother's wedding this weekend. Very excited for it. Big family event, obviously. And we've got New York City now returned to a form of lockdown, really, because that's what this is, right? It's not a shelter in place lockdown, but it's the dystopian show your papers, please, for the vaccine lockdown, which is not just New York. It's also San Fran, Philly,
New Orleans,
spreading
everywhere.
And here's the thing. I've said this so many times as a New Yorker to the rest of the country. If the lockdown Fauciite lunatics get away with this in New York, it is much more likely to be replicated by the crazy libs in other places. This has been true of so many things that we have seen, including, of course, the original lockdowns and the extension of them beyond the 2 weeks to slow the spread. But New York City businesses are now suing Mayor Bill de Blasio over what they say is an unfair vaccine mandate. Quote, this is from the Daily Mail, "This will destroy our business." There's so much going on here, Clay. We mentioned the racism part of this in a second, which we will certainly get into. But I also just want to point out, New York hasn't recovered. Cities have not actually recovered. There are thousands of businesses closed forever. There are a lot of other, particularly talking about restaurants, venues, things like that, that are just limping along. And now they're going to have to deal with this because there are people who are going to say, I'm just not going to, if you have a choice, if I have a choice between, fantastic steak restaurant A and steak restaurant B, and one of them is a vaccine mandate place and the other is not, out of principle, even though now I've been forced to get the vaccine, out of principle, I'm going to go to the place that believes in human medical freedom.
No doubt, Buck. And there are a couple of angles here that I think are important. One, anyone who has ever run a small business, the idea that you would have people want to come spend money at your business, and at the front door, you are going to turn them away, not because your restaurant is so packed that there's no availability for them, but because of this vaccine passport, as you are attempting to struggle from the lockdowns, and maybe your business, maybe your restaurant, maybe your bar just barely survived by their fingertips. That's part one, is crazy. Part two associated with this, Buck, and I don't think this is getting enough discussion. I'm a dad, right? During fall break, we may take a vacation. During Christmas break or Thanksgiving, we may take a vacation when kids are out of school. I'm not going to New York City. Why would I go to New York City where tons of people come in to spend money? This vaccine passport, it's going to hit hotels. It's going to hit restaurants, bars. Not only is it impacting people who live in New York, there are millions of people right now listening to us who might take a vacation to New York. And they're going to say, you know what? I don't want to go somewhere where I'm going to not be able to go into a restaurant. I'm not going to be able to go into a bar. This is a debilitating blow. to small businesses across New York City. And I think so many people who have never had to make a payroll, who've never had to sit down and understand how a business works.
Also known as politicians for the most part.
Well, for the most part, unfortunately. Those guys have no idea what situation they are creating for small businesses that are already struggling all over New York.
We never got back to normal. And that's what I think has been lost in so much of this. There's never been normal, really, in New York City. It's not normal even here in Nashville, where you get into an Uber or you go to the airport.
Do you have to wear one back from dinner last night or just on the way out?
Only on the way out. So the Nashville-based Uber driver made us mask up. But the Franklin, Tennessee-based Uber driver said you or did not. I mean, I didn't wear a mask. I don't know. He didn't say
but he didn't request it. It's funny where you get in an Uber can impact things. I was saying when we went to dinner last night, my fifth grader had his school meeting, got to go meet the teacher and everything else. No parents were wearing masks virtually for that meeting inside of Williamson County. If you were in other cities, maybe even Nashville, everybody would have been masked up in cosmetic theater buying in.
I can't, it's a private communication, but I will say I just had a friend who's a journalist based in D.C., kind of centrist journalist, text me, and she was like, "You were right about Fauci and masks all along. I'm part of the revolution now." I was so excited. I was
right.
Like,
I
thank you.
This is happening. This is important.
People are finally seeing it's too nuts. They're wrong too often.
That's right.
Stop believing in this crap.
We need to get 60% of people, right? We need to get 60% of people to buy in, look at the data, right? And some of those people are going to have to be Democrats in order for that to happen. And then Biden's going to have a tough political reality. He's going to have to say, wait a minute, we keep beating this COVID drum and it's so discordant now that people are abandoning it.
Right.
That's what we need to have happen.
We're never going to be able to, with reason, facts, logic, and a respectful approach, we're never going to be able to convince people who
there's 40% that are lost.
Who double mask in the shower or go for bike rides by themselves with goggles and a mask and hand sanitizer By the way, hand sanitizer, it's not stopping you from getting COVID, by the way. Just putting that, remember when washing your hands, Lysoling your groceries, all this stuff. They've been wrong about so much of this garbage all along. But if we can at least get the solid majority
60%,
of the American people to understand this is crazy, it becomes politically untenable and starts the edifice of COVID lockdown madness starts to end. But it's going to require active measures. You can't just sort of sit around and say, because Clay, here's the thing. There are a lot of people who don't get tired of this. They accept this as life. In fact, we had this
data. Yeah,
the data that I want to dive into. I even forgot we got so
much
to talk about here in the show.
We'll hit this data to close it out. This is a good one.
That's what we call a tease.
Yeah, that's right. It's a great tease in the business. And by the way, no company should be able to monitor your emails, your web searches. That's your business. But you got to protect yourself, Buck. ExpressVPN will help make sure that you can use a VPN to protect yourself. That's a virtual private network. There's a lot of them, but ExpressVPN is the best. You want to make sure that they can't follow you everywhere. They'll help keep you anonymous online, and that'll keep big tech websites from having access to your data. It's why both of us are using ExpressVPN, and it's easy to sign up. Buck, what do you need to do?
All you have to do to take back your online privacy with ExpressVPN is go right now to ExpressVPN.com/Clay and Buck. By visiting our link, you'll get an extra 3 months free of ExpressVPN service with a 1-year package. 15 months for the price of 12. It's a great deal. Again, that's ExpressVPN.com/Clay and Buck. ExpressVPN.com/Clay and Buck to protect your data today.
Welcome back in. Final segment of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show, Wednesday edition. Encourage you to go subscribe to the podcast. We want to thank all of you out there, the 400-plus AM and FM affiliates in all 50 states, and all of you, wherever you may be listening in this country or around the world. Great show so far today. Rob O'Neill in the first hour, the man who shot Osama bin Laden, Amber Smith, a former pilot in Afghanistan. Great discussion with those guys. Lots of great guests this week in general. If you miss any of them, search out Clay Travis, Buck Sexton. You can find us, obviously, anywhere on social. But go subscribe to the podcast. Give us 5 stars. We had an incredible tease there as we were going to break. Buck, it's really fascinating to look at who the people are that are most in favor of vaccine mandates and then to consider what jobs they may have and how divergent those perspectives can be based on what you do for a living.
Ooh, the data, Clay. We love it here on this show. This is, and a hat tip our friend Alex Berenson for sharing this from his Twitter account. It's Gallup polling, though. So it's Gallup polling. And you have here opinions about employee vaccination requirements by worker location. We've got fully on-site, hybrid model, fully remote. And here's the basics of what this data tells you. Those who strongly favor people getting vaccine mandates by the employer are predominantly the most common is those who are fully remote.
Of course,
the people who strongly oppose in the highest numbers, by the way, strongly favor 44% of those who are fully remote strongly favor vaccine mandates for all employers. Okay. And fully on site, 33% strongly oppose. So when you actually break down the numbers, the basic way to look at this is that the fully on site folks are much more likely to strongly oppose vaccine mandates. The fully remote people who are at the least risk are the biggest wimps when it comes to COVID and want the most mandates and Fauciism and madness. This breaks down along the class lines that we've talked about a lot here. The basic paradigm of the COVID lockdown was the CNN and MSNBC watching, you know, middle to upper middle class libs sitting at home in an urban or suburban area.
Virtually no economic impact from a lockdown because they could do their job just as easily at home.
And ordered their Uber Eats.
They could watch Netflix.
And watch their Netflix and they're fine. The people who had to show up and operate the grocery stores, the truck drivers who had to make sure we actually had food in the on the shelves for
police,
our bellies.
Police, military.
They had to keep going and they're the ones who are most likely to say, let's not be crazy with these employer mandates. You know, the military's facing a vaccine mandate right now, which is madness. I'm having a lot of people reach out to me who say, I'm going to leave. They're facing a dishonorable discharge if they won't get the vaccine, if they refuse to get the vaccine, which is insane to me.
Yeah. And again, we're going to need to continue to talk about this because the story is going to move so quickly. But I just want all of you to think about this as we discussed earlier. As an adult, or as a person who is old enough to remember getting vaccines or shots, it's not even fair to call something a vaccine if you have to get it every year. That's the flu shot, right? And right now, the COVID vaccine, you are going to have to get a booster 8 months after you get the COVID vaccine. And the challenge here going forward, Buck, is I think what you're demonstrating there with those Gallup poll numbers, people have to be able to assess risk, right? And people who have to go out on a day-to-day basis and work facing the general public, interacting, they understand how impossible it is to hide from a virus. People who get to stay in their home and they write on a computer for a living and they are involved in technology and they don't actually have to see anybody face-to-face, they mistakenly think that that is a world that everybody can embrace. The guy who works at the gas station or the girl who's working out at the grocery store, they don't have that luxury.
But the remote elites, if you will, because being able to work remote is a huge privilege. The remote elites who are big believers in the CNN Fauciite obsession, they also like it because they feel like they're doing their part, which
their
is just
virtue signal,
which is a pseudo humble way of telling everybody they're in the fight to defeat COVID. That's right. They're so smug sitting at home on their couch watching CNN, having their pad thai, which I love too, by the way, delivered
to
them
New
at
York.
Home.
You overlap with a lot of these people.
I mean,
people.
I'm just saying, I just don't watch the CNN and do the smug virtue signaling. I do love the delivery food, but nonetheless, this is the reality of it, that people that were not affected by it and felt like they were able to continue on with many aspects of their lives, they're the ones the most that demand masks the most. They're the ones that insist on, and they, by the way, they will defend teachers' unions for all the nonsense yes. they put the kids through. We haven't even talked about the developmental delays and honestly the now developmental catastrophe for a lot of kids.
And
the
look, there are a lot of people
is.
That may be in danger of missing another year because we are sliding down the slippery slope of another lockdown
right.
in many parts of America.
But, you know, if you're an NPR podcast listening, Maddow watching, New Yorker subscribing, Lib, you think, well, I have to defend the teachers' unions for their hypocrisy and their demand. But, I mean, I still expect the people who run my quarter store and who run the grocery store to show up.
Well, you
they have no choice.
You also, if you have kids, can afford to have a tutor. You can
yeah.
afford to put your kids in private school. You can ensure that your children are not actually falling
yeah.
behind. And what does all this mean, Buck? When we come tomorrow, this is what you call a day tease in advance. The impact of Joe Biden's disastrous leadership is becoming very real. The numbers reflect it, and we're going to share it
yeah.
tomorrow, and it ain't pretty.
People are realizing not only did they push out confused old Grandpa Biden here and pretend like we couldn't all see the decline in Biden, but also the whole bill of goods, the whole what we were promised we'd get if he were president. Not only is it not coming to fruition, it's going in the opposite
direction.
It's going
up in smoke. It's all failure.
Forget normalcy. We have catastrophe. And that's starting to bite. That's starting to have problems for Biden's numbers.
No doubt. And this is what we need to see. Look, the people who knew Biden was going to be a disaster, you, me, a lot of our listeners, that's great. But we need more allies, independents, Democrats who have functional brains. Yes, they do exist. They're all starting to line up with us.
Listen to the
show. And that is trouble.
They should listen to the Clay and Buck show. This is where we make sense.
Honestly, every single day, that's what we do. We'll have a lot more of it tomorrow.
From Nashville, we'll talk to you.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.